do want to say one quick thing. So if you remember, last week I brought up The Haunting of Hill House because it had a
Yes.
queer character.
Yes.
So we finished the series. I can say definitively that the one queer character was our favorite character, and
Yes.
it's not just because she's queer. Actually, the story, it's based on a book written in 1959 by Shirley Jackson, I believe. So it was adapted for modern times, but of course I was like, as soon as I found out it was based on a novel, I was like, no wonder it's so good. They focused a lot more on kind of the family and their life. So Theo is the lesbian sister. She's like the middle child. We don't really see a lot of like her romantic life aside from what I told you. There are episodes that focus on each of the siblings. And so for her episode, we saw her like having a hookup. And she also has this power where she can, if she touches someone or something, or even just like is kind of in a room, she can get a sense of what went on. She's a child psychiatrist, and she finds out that one of her patients is being abused because she went down to the basement of her house during a visit and felt around the room and found out what had happened in that room and found out that the child was being abused by the foster father and like had him arrested. What I thought was really interesting is she wears gloves to protect herself from
Oh
feeling things when she doesn't want to.
gosh.
And
Oh
so in the scene
my
in Charmed when Maggie tried the gloves and I was like, "Oh my God, it's just like Theo. That's crazy." You know, but back to Haunting of Hill House. The show, I can say for a fact, if you do not like scary stuff, it will be too scary for you.
Oh
That
man.
being said, I think that it's not just a good scary show, it's like a good show. The
Yeah.
character development was fantastic. The actors did a really good job. They're all like unknown, relatively unknown actors. There was a lot of monologuing, which I think is kind of like a dying art form. And I think a lot of the passages were lifted from the novel, but you know, a lot of it was original material too. It was a really beautifully done series, and it ended on such a surprisingly positive and happy, like optimistic note. Theo is among the survivors, and we see a scene at the end where, you know, the remaining family members are like having a meal or something, like at somebody's house, and her Gaijin love interest is featured in the scene. So we know that she's like there. Anyway, her name is Trish. The youngest sister commits suicide at the beginning of the show, and so Theo's love interest comes to the funeral. Anyway, it's a really good show. If you're looking for something spooky to get in the spirit for Halloween, for sure watch it. If you're looking for some like moderate queerness, for sure watch it. It's not like super in your face queer, but there's also not a lot of like super in your face hetero stuff, you know, to be fair, because it's really
No.
just focusing on this family and like, you know, their lives.
Yeah. You're giving
So.
you're reminding me of my experience with Get Out, where like I know it's gonna be good and I'm too scared to watch it. You sent me that great overview of the series on Vulture, which contains all the spoilers, but it was still a fantastic read. Like this is clearly a show where the writing is like on point. Wow. And you just have to sort of stomach the scary parts to get at the richness of the content. I mean, it's a mini series about grief and loss and love, how to escape the prison of one's own past.
Yeah,
Um,
exactly. Yeah, it was really well put for somebody who didn't watch
yeah, I haven't
it.
watched it all, but the Vulture article was that you sent me was
Yeah.
great. That recap.
You know, I was trying to think of a way for you or anybody else to watch it without, you know, seeing the scary parts, but a lot of them are really essential to the plot, you know. So it's not like you can just cut those scenes out.
I mean, even reading it, I was kind of freaked out. Yeah, some of it just sounded terrifying.
There was this one jump scare in a later episode where I literally like I screamed because I was so startled by it, and it was so terrifying. And one of my cats had been napping on my lap, and she like bolted off and like scratched me because she was so scared.
Damn.
I felt so bad. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I let it get to this point. I screamed, I think, a total of 2 times throughout the series.
I assume that the character of Theo was queer in the book as well. Maybe she wasn't queer, but they made her in the book, but they made her queer on the series, or maybe her girlfriend wasn't Asian and they just made her Asian for the series.
They refer to Theodora as a flamboyant bohemian artist. So that could easily be a lesbian. It's interesting because it seems like even a lot of the characters seem to be different between the book and the Netflix adaptation. But it
Yeah.
was also adapted into a film a couple of times, apparently in 1963 and then again in 1999. And both times it was called The Haunting. I really think that it's a great idea to adapt novels into a series rather than a movie, because the amount of effort that goes into character development and the plot exposition and all of that in a book, it just cannot, you can't do it justice in a film. You can't do it justice in just like a couple of hours, or even if you want to go Lord of the Rings and do it in 3 hours, it's still, feel like it's not the same, you know? So this series, I mean, it's 10 episodes. Each one is roughly an hour long. So think about, 10 hours as opposed to like 2 or 2.5 hour film. They really dove into the details of this family and their story. So I feel like they did a fantastic job, and I really hope that in the future they kind of follow that trend of adapting novels into a series.
You know, they split that last Harry Potter movie into two movies. Stop trying to monetize this. Just tell the story and tell it well. Yeah, so why don't we talk about Black Lightning before we jump into Charmed?
So this week we saw a little bit more of Anissa's fuckboy come out. Although I have to give her props for her open and clear communication. That's always like my thing, like open and clear communication, with Adina on the bull type. You know, she had it at one point, lost it a little bit along the way. And Anissa, I feel like, I'm really happy that she spoke her mind to Grace when Grace was like, said basically that she caught her with Zoe B. And Anissa was like, no. No, you didn't. And, clarified that, we weren't in a relationship and we were free to see other people. But that is also just, a trademark fuckboy line, so.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to say, I had so many mixed feelings watching her scenes with Grace. And I think that's a good thing. Even though it's frustrating for me to watch as a viewer, because I'm like, am I actually rooting for you or not? Do I ship you or do I not ship you? But I also like that this sensation of having incredibly mixed feelings is like new and exciting. Because usually when we jump on a ship, I'm like, full steam ahead.
And yeah.
And this time I'm like, no, let's paddle. Let's tread carefully.
With caution. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're like, we're paddling. Yeah, this is more of a canoe than a ship.
Oh, yeah.
This is a small boat.
Yeah, we're moving at a like slow burn pace, but we're trying to be careful out here. Also, do you notice that whenever Anissa is putting herself out there in front of girls, she is like, she looks super cute. She does new stuff with her hair. She's got like a fun, funky outfit going. Grace is just casual because she's a bartender and she's working at this bar. She still looks fine. And of course, Anissa had to say so with that lie. Like, you're too damn fine to be lonely. And oh my God, she's just full of these lines.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, does she practice this in the mirror? Like, what's the secret? I feel like the secret is just having like a team of writers write your lines for you.
It's eye roll central. I think it also potentially feeds Dr. Rebecca Hall's theory that there may not be an actual lesbian in the room writing these lines.
I definitely think that that is a high chance, but I think it's possible that they have sort of a consulting queer.
Yeah, well, whoever this consulting queer is, they're a top.
They're a top from the Bay Area or somewhere where like they have like multiple safe spaces and can like imagine these kinds of queer bars existing, because like if you're from 99% of the rest of America, these places do not exist.
If you were from the Midwest, you were not raised with this.
Absolutely not.
You were not raised with this level of shamelessness. You have to be. You have to be at like a queer global epicenter in order for you to be that damn shameless when you make passes at women.
I mean, I think it's possible, but unlikely. That's where I'm at right now. Okay. And this is having done absolutely zero research
on who the writing team is.
Who the writers are.
Not to jump too far ahead, but I can tell that the writers of Charmed, there've got to be at least one or two queers in there, because the way that the dyke drama is playing out on that show feels true to life.
I agree.
Okay, but back to Black Lightning. So Anissa's at this bar, makes a comment about how, we weren't in a relationship. And I'm like, true story. You were not in a relationship. So obviously Grace didn't owe you anything and you didn't owe Grace anything, but you did owe her a phone call back. So it was confirmed through the dialogue that she was the one who dropped Grace.
That was the impression that I also got. And I was kind of annoyed with Anissa for being so I don't know. It's just the confidence turns to cockiness very quickly with her.
Oh, yeah.
And, we can see that just like in last week's episode, we could see that with her behavior also as Thunder, where she's just like being, Robin Hood, like the preacher said, basically just going and stealing money from, you know, drug dealers and criminals and whatever, and giving the money to the church. You know, the way she goes about it, it's beyond vigilante behavior. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it's really, I feel like we can see this cockiness oozing into her personal life. Like we hadn't seen it before in season one.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's not just that she's like cocky, and she's setting herself up, by the way. She's setting herself up for a colossal fail. So much hubris in mm-hmm. her behavior at the moment. One thing that I also realized from this past week's episode is that Anissa is someone for whom the ends justifies the means. That yes. is, the outcome is what matters and not the process that gets you there. And that's true not just with her vigilante behavior, but also with the way that she tackles her romantic life. It's like, and she wants this outcome, which is to be with Grace, but she's not thinking through the process of mm-hmm. how can I be with Grace? Like step one, don't drop her. Like, don't leave her hanging when y'all are communicating. And then like, I actually was kind of bothered by her just like waltzing into Grace's place of work.
Yeah.
And like expecting Grace to like to just sit and listen. And like mm-hmm. Grace has to listen because she's in a customer service role right now. I just felt really annoyed, and I want to be able to evaluate Anissa's behavior objectively, but I'm also like starting to become very protective of Grace.
Yeah, no, I am too. I mean, I feel like I've been protective of Grace from the beginning because I'm like, you know, the way Anissa's acting, I'm like, just what are you trying to do? Like, what are you trying to do to us, the fans watching this? Like, are we supposed to be enjoying this? Because I'm not enjoying this, you know, like I just want, yeah. I want something to happen. I want it to be like, this cannot be the conflict. The conflict cannot be just that like Anissa is bad at dating.
Yeah. You know? No, it can't be. I feel like the writers might be cornering themselves because the screen time that we get for Grace is so limited. Mm. And if you just think about the dialogue, even in those scenes, Grace has very little to say. It's mostly Anissa talking.
It's true.
That like makes me concerned that Grace as a character is somewhat disposable. She's not getting very much character development outside of Anissa's interest in her. And I'm worried, I guess, that we're not going to get it's not going to follow the canon in the comics, the canon plotline. Oh, I mean, just
that's
putting
such
that
a
out
huge
there.
Deviation from. Yeah, I mean, it's like I said before when I was like reading up on that, I was like, oh, okay, this is canon. It has to happen. And then I thought, but it's the CW.
It's the CW.
So we don't know. I do just want to say really quickly, Carmen Phillips over at Autostraddle wrote the recap for this episode. Mm-hmm. And there's a great part in the recap where it's a screen cap of Anissa at the bar. And the caption is like her saying, last week, Autostraddle called me a Shane. Do you have any idea how much that hurts? And then it's a screen cap of Grace going, ask Carmen de la Pica Morales.
Oh, yeah. We just got that one scene. And Grace is like, yeah, I'm seeing plenty of other people, which, look at her. You know,
yeah,
like,
for real.
Of course she's seeing plenty of other people.
She's getting asked out every night.
And she's like, she works at like a queer bar and she's like a hot bartender, please. But I don't know. I'm just worried. Is Grace going to fall for this? I don't want Grace to just say yes to Anissa's offer. Anissa says, you know, who says I can't be serious? And mm-hmm. I'm like, Anissa, you are a damn mess. You are a hot mess with this vigilante crap and like sort of messing around with your what was she called, social media booty call. And Grace Choi is soul food. That's what Jennifer tells Anissa. You need soul food. You need something real.
Yeah. Well, she doesn't specifically call Grace soul food because she doesn't know about Grace. But yeah, she does tell her you need some soul food.
Yeah, I mean, right.
And she says she's cotton candy. You need soul food. Yeah.
Damn. I mean, like, even if Jennifer isn't referring to Grace, the writers are. The writers mm-hmm. are referring to Grace Choi as Anissa's soul
yes,
food.
Yes, that's true. That's absolutely true. Yeah.
And if anything, I think Grace is going to be such – if they end up being together, Grace would definitely be a really positive influence on Anissa because, like, she's real. And mm-hmm. in season one, we got that scene where Grace talked about how lonely it would be to be a superhero because you'd have to keep secrets from the people you love. Yeah. And so, like, Grace is also someone who wouldn't tolerate lies. It would be very difficult for that Thunder Grace to actually work out if Anissa keeps her identity as Thunder a secret from Grace.
Yeah. And we've seen that on, you know, tons of superhero shows and movies before, yeah, where like, you know, the keeping that secret takes a toll on their personal relationships.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, but we have a long way to go before we see them struggle with that. Cause this is already, I mean, like you said, I don't want to see Grace just, you know, like acquiesce and be like, okay, yeah, you know, like, I mean, and this is hot. Like, obviously I would be a sucker for her. I'm not even going to lie. I would fall for her fuckboy tomfoolery, but
no,
I think that Grace, I mean, maybe not catching feelings, but like giving her a chance, just like, you know, for the casual relationship at least.
Yeah.
But I think that Grace, I'm hoping that she kind of holds out for Anissa to at least prove herself and that she can be better.
Like, is Anissa actually reliable? Is she actual girlfriend material? I almost feel like she and Zoe might deserve each other more because they're both looking for something kind of fun and fast.
Yeah, they're both, you know, a little shallow. Yeah, but, you know, Zoe wasn't in this episode. So I'm wondering if the writers are already kind of like, you know, getting her out. I feel like they just sort of put her in as like a distraction and for us to be like, you know, wait a minute. What happened to Grace? She's supposed to be with Grace. And then, you know, to make us feel like, oh, Anissa should be with Grace.
Yeah. I mean, so far on Andy Ello's IMDb, they're not listing multiple episodes for like Andy Ello, this actress. Mm. Grace appears in multiple episodes this season. I love the sister scenes, and I love that we're getting more of them this season. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I love that they're using that time to also help develop Anissa.
Yeah, yeah. I actually like that scene more than the Anissa and Grace scene in the bar, to be honest, because it was like, I was like laughing. I just love Jennifer's like quick wit. The way Anissa was reacting was like, all right, I mean, these are some hard truths that you feel like I need to hear. Maybe I don't want to hear it right now, but like Anissa knew, you know, she was like thinking about it. The writers intended the soul food remark to refer to Grace, and I could tell that Anissa was thinking about Grace when Jennifer said it. I feel like that's the reason Anissa went and sought her out at the bar to go talk to her.
And Jen's conversation with her was also what prompted Anissa to go and have a good time with Zobie at that like loft apartment.
That's true. To go out before she dries up.
The sister scenes are really, they're great on the show in general. I think I consider them to be a highlight. And because like Anissa and Grace don't have like a real love dynamic, they're kind of walking through the awkward space of like, are we friends? Are we more than friends? Are we dating? Are we not dating? But we're flirting. I came up with a typology for like lesbian relationships with one of my besties. Category of relationship, strictly platonic, a history of dating, and then y'all hooked up. And then a fourth category is there was a thing.
Ooh, and is that in quotes?
There was a thing. And that's what Grace and Anissa are to each other. They technically haven't dated. They haven't hooked up that we know of. And they're not truly just like platonic with each other. They had a thing. And so it's awkward.
And even if they did hook up, it was clearly a little bit more than that. So I believe there was a thing.
There was a thing and it got awkward. That's what happened.
Yeah.
And like so many queer women, I think relationships or dynamics fall under that category of there was a thing. So even if you didn't consummate it, even if you didn't hook up, there was like a moment and now it's weird.
The struggles.
We will see what happens with Thunder Grace in the coming episodes. I don't know whether Grace is going to be in next week's episode or not. I just know that Anissa is like, she's setting herself up for some kind of terrible fall. With her cockiness and the way that she's just sort of stealing money to solve community problems. I'm like, how is that sustainable? It's not.
Yeah, this is definitely going to come back to bite her in the ass at some point. I mean, I feel like it's really clearly building up to that. But, you know, I mean, and I know Bold Type is like a completely different show, but and on a completely different network. But there were a couple of times where we thought that, you know, something was building up to one of the girls facing consequences for their earlier actions, and it just didn't happen.
Yeah, you know? That's true.
So totally I'm true. Hoping that it doesn't just like, you know, end up going away. But I feel like it should, because usually on the Bold Type, you could tell they already learned their lesson and like regretted their actions. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's why they felt like it was okay to just like, you know, not bring it up again in the script. But, you know, in this case, Anissa clearly thinks that what she's doing is righteous. So I'm just waiting for her dad to find out.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And to find out that Gambie has been helping her, or helped her at least the last time.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Another betrayal, another secret kept that Gambie keeps from Jefferson. Yeah. No. Yeah. I'm like, this isn't the same comparison, but I am getting like Grace as our Asami type character, because yes. Grace is going to be there providing emotional support for Anissa, mm-hmm. who is a goddamn mess. And yeah. that's what Asami did for Korra. She played the supportive femme labor role. And so I feel like that's what we're going to get. Like, shit's going to hit the fan, and then Anissa's going to have to face the consequences of her actions, and maybe Grace will be there to help her work through those feelings.
Yeah, that's probably
that's the season for them.
Yeah, that's probably where that's going.
Yeah.
Don't even bother watching the rest of the show. We already know what's going to happen.
So let's move on to Charmed and the dyke drama we witnessed this week. Ooh, as soon as I knew they were making a truth serum, I knew trouble was around the corner.
I know. Poor Nico.
Nico grabbed the wrong thermos. We saw that coming a mile away. As soon as the thermos got put on the table, all the shit's going to come out.
I know. Well, I'm really happy. I thought she was going to face like really serious repercussions at her job. Especially when they showed the serum kicking in the interrogation room.
Yeah.
But luckily, you know, it didn't seem like anything bad happened. But, and it also, we found out the user of the truth serum apparently forgets the things that they said. It's almost like being blackout drunk. I feel like it's basically the same thing. Like, you just spew a whole bunch of truths, things that you really shouldn't be saying to people, and then you don't remember any of it. Basically, this episode starts out with the girls thinking that they've communicated with their mother through using a spirit board. And I'm not sure why they don't call it a Ouija board. Maybe that's like a brand name thing. But anyway, so they're using a spirit board and their mother tells them, actually, this was at the end of the last episode, don't trust Harry. And Harry is their white lighter who is supposed to be basically their guardian and mentor and blah, blah, blah. They're trying to find out, is it really their mom? Can they really trust Harry? Blah, blah, blah. And they're really split on, you know, Mel is like diehard the whole time. She's like, it's mom. For sure it's mom. I know it is. And then Macy and Maggie go back and forth. So I knew from Kristen, my senior Charmed correspondent, expert, whatever. she said that the white lighter is a character from the original series. Mm-hmm. So he's like basically there to stay. I looked it up and saw that he's... I think he's a series regular, yeah. But then I thought, what if he's a series regular because he turns out to be a bad guy? Like, he's the villain of the show. But when he was shown in the hospital room, blanking that woman's memory, or Kristen saw, like, what he was doing and immediately was like, oh, okay, so he is a white lighter. So I don't know what that meant, but apparently something about what he was doing meant to her that, like, he's for sure a white lighter and to be trusted. But newer viewers of the show may not know for sure. And of course, it's like, okay, he's like a white British man. Like, hello, don't fucking trust them.
Don't trust this guy. He's a colonizer.
Yeah.
Keep your distance.
He's a patriarchal colonizer, for God's sake. So, yeah, so it made sense that they would not want to trust him. And I felt that too. But there's no way their mom died. And it was just as easy as that to, like, pull out the spirit board and talk to her. And then, you know, knowing that Harry would be a series regular and blah, blah, blah. So I have to say, I saw it coming from the beginning that it was not going to be their mom.
Yeah, samesies. Yeah. I don't think they're trying to make it difficult to predict, though. We as an audience, we're supposed to be suspicious from the get-go. So I think they wanted us to buy into it as much as we did without being totally trustworthy. And I was on Twitter as the show was going on. People were like, that is definitely not her mom.
Yeah.
And, like, I will say that it's also interesting that the gay one is the quickest to believe, I guess, alternative theories. And it's sort of like, you know, lesbians and astrology. Like,
I was just going to bring up, I wonder what Mel's sign is.
Right? We need to find out. We need to know what a sign is. You know, when lesbians are stronger believers of astrology than they are of God. I mean, it makes sense to me that of the three of them, Mel is the one who immediately believes that her mom might be back instead of like being a skeptic, which is what Macy is. She's the scientist that she's supposed to be the skeptic.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. It's also interesting that in this episode, they ended one of the hetero ships. Yeah. So the youngest of them, Maggie, she ends things with her would-be boyfriend. and we're glad of it because he was some
hope that it's for good. I really do.
He was just some bland white dude.
Yeah. And he was just like boring and he had a bad haircut and like,
yeah.
Anyway.
I know. As far as Macy's love interest, I feel like I don't know him well enough to know whether I support them together.
Yeah. He seems okay so far. I can't really find anything wrong with him.
Yeah, no, there's nothing wrong with him. But when it comes to Nico, maybe you can tell me what you think. Like, do you feel like, okay, let's put ourselves in Mel's position. Because by the end of the episode, she sort of like, she forgave her and was like, that's in the past.
Yeah. So she found out when Nico drank the truth serum. She admitted to Mel that she slept with her ex-fiance while they were broken up twice.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then...
And that she brought a gift to Mel out of guilt.
Yes, yes. Which is heavy stuff. I have to say... So were you going to ask if we were in her shoes, what would we do if we were in Mel's shoes?
That was such a, like, an exciting and uncomfortable scene to watch where, you know, Nico is just sort of like spilling all of it, saying all the stuff, and she can't stop herself. And Mel has to hear it. And it's never fun to hear that, you know, your ex was with somebody. It's like, you know, that on some level they probably were, but you never want to hear it. And certainly not in the way that she found out.
Yeah. Well, and your ex that you just got back together with, you know, because then it's like, I mean, I feel like if I were Mel, I'd be like, okay, so like, do you still have feelings for your ex-fiance? Because Mel reveals that Nico left her fiance for Mel.
Yeah.
So that's kind of heavy stuff.
No, like y'all were engaged. Then you left your fiance to be with Mel. And then like the minute you and Mel broke, not the minute, there was probably some time in there.
But yeah, it was like, she said it was like a week or so. I don't know. It was like a short period of time. You know,
yeah. So whenever that was, you slept with your ex, not once, but twice. And then out of guilt, you buy Mel a gift. I mean, and Mel just received the gift earlier that day. So I was kind of fuming.
I would have been pissed if I were Mel.
Yeah. And like, obviously it's not Nico's fault that she kept spilling the truth out there. Like that was information that Mel was never supposed to have. Yeah. But
which now, Maggie points out to her.
Yeah, but now you can't unknow what you know.
So Mel ends the episode. She's on the phone with Nico, and you only hear her side of the conversation. But basically, we find out that Nico doesn't remember what she said. Mel assures her she didn't say anything embarrassing and that, you know, everything's fine. Maggie had convinced her earlier that, like, you know, she needs to let go of that. Like, you know, like you said, that wasn't meant for her to hear. And she needs to just, like, get over it and, like, whatever. I would not have gotten over it that easily.
Not that quickly.
I definitely would have brought it up and been like, yeah, so you said this, you know, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Like you would think that things would be completely over between Nico and her ex-fiance if she left her for Mel. Like, why would you then go back to, you know, I don't know. I would be having a day, man.
It would have been so different. It would have been so different if she had had like a one night stand with someone random. Or like some other person, but like to go back to someone who you have history with, who you left to be with Mel. I mean, and so Mel even says, I'm allowed to have feelings about this. And I was like, I was with her on that. She is allowed to have feelings about this. And like her pretending that she never heard the information, I feel like does a disservice to her own emotions.
And to her character. That was so out of character for Mel. I did not expect her to just go along with that idea so easily after Maggie said it. I was like, oh, there's no way. But
yeah, Mel has always struck me as someone who's like emotionally hot-headed and needs a lot of time to cool down. And she cooled down before the episode ended. I'm like, I feel like we needed 2 or 3 more weeks before she was back to, before she was in a place to revisit the issue. But she's now sort of playing along and pretending like it didn't happen.
You know, we were comparing Anissa and Grace to Cora and Asami, and I feel like that fits even more with Mel and Nico from what I've seen so far. I really feel like, and not just to be assigning the Gaijin role to Asami every time, but Mel is kind of the rash, hot-headed one, you know, much like Cora, and Nico, I feel like, has been taking on the emotional labor for her, and so much so that we saw that,
sorry, it was Nico who broke it off
with Mel when Mel was just, you know, I guess pushing her away after her mother died and she just couldn't do it anymore. I think we might be seeing more of that this season, more of that kind of dynamic. You know, sometimes even if we get queer writers, we still get a very heteronormative relationship dynamic on screen with mm-hmm. queer couples. You know, I mean, obviously this happens with lesbian couples. Like, we know that this happens where, like, the, you know, one partner, usually the femme one, if they're like in a femme butch relationship, takes on more of the emotional labor.
Mm-hmm.
But we also know that this is, like, super normalized in hetero relationships. So I guess my question is, like, where are the writers getting this from? Like, is this just what yeah. they're used to seeing in a hetero dynamic?
Some of it probably has to do with gender norms. Mm-hmm. And I would even say that norms around butch femme dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
But even though Mel's not butch, but you know how
no one's butch.
I'm like, you know how it is on TV? Like, you're butch if you look like Shane. Shane's more androgynous. She's not like an actual, I wouldn't call her butch. But for TV, is Xena the butch one? By TV standards.
It's like anyone who's like kind of maybe tomboyish at times or like strong, you know, physically like the strong one or whatever. Like that's kind of like the butch, you know, male assigned partner. And it's like, it's really annoying.
or like the one who's emotionally detached or emotionally immature, like Anissa. And then you have like the one who's got their life together, who is like quote unquote emotional or femme role. But I also think the other aspect of it is primary character versus a supporting character.
Yes.
So that's supporting
true.
Characters do, they, that's what they do. They support and mm-hmm. are like with Cora, with Anissa and with Mel, those are the major characters. And that's sort of like, it's not to say that they center masculinity on shows, but they do tend to center angsty, broody people
they make for more interesting characters.
Exactly. They tend to center emotionally complicated people mm-hmm. on the show. And that's like, that's Mel, that's Anissa, that's Cora, instead of centering the people who are like emotionally mature, have their shit together, know how to provide support.
Yeah. And you know, like I said, that makes for a more interesting character. But the important thing about writing a character like that is that you're leaving room for character growth and development. And what I'm seeing repeatedly is that writers are not providing that kind of growth and development. The character just kind of mm-hmm. is like a little bit flatlined in one note throughout, you know, other things are going on and changing throughout their lives, but that specific aspect of their characters tends to stay the same. And that's, I feel like, where it gets frustrating for me as you know, somebody watching the show. I'm like, you can't just be like this forever. At some point you have to like learn.
Yeah, I feel really confident about the way that Melko is going so far. In that, you know, Nico is, even though she's a side character, she's like a supporting role, supporting cast, we are getting information about her, like the fact that she slept with her ex. Mm-hmm. And they decided to give her that truth serum instead of another character.
Yes, that's true. She was the one who mixed up the...
So we are getting information premises. About her because she's revealing her truth. To mm-hmm. Mel, and mm-hmm. we're finding out more about, I guess, the fact that she has a life. She was a detective. We got a scene of her, in her role.
That's true.
Interrogating somebody. So I think that's the difference between this queer woman of color ship and others, because in this queer woman of color ship, both of the characters have lives that we know things about.
That's true. That's a really valid point. And, you know, I do think that the writers are trying to show a little bit of growth with Mel because, you know, in this episode... she was the one who was really holding on to the idea that this was her mom. And I think this is when she maybe at least is starting to, if not has completely like let go of, you know, like not let go of her mom, but like, you know, trying really hard to bring her back or like, you know, being like so angry about her loss.
Mm-hmm.
And then like I said, I felt like it was kind of out of character that she just like, you know, flipped a switch and completely forgave Nico and acted mm-hmm. like she never said anything.
Yeah.
But, you know, if that's the direction that they want to take her character in, I'm kind of interested to see how much farther it's going to go.
Woo. Okay. I mean, this was great. We had so much to talk about with our small number of scenes that we got with our queer women of color ships. We got a lot of dyke drama.
As much
we got so much drama out of it. I'm pleased. I live for this shit. I mean, I want to be tortured just a little bit. Like, you know, fangirling is a form of masochism.
Yeah, I'm not going to kink shame, but.
Yeah, I mean, you want to be like, You want to like feel awful. You want to feel amazing. You want to feel like the push and pull. You want to feel conflicted, and you want the you want to ship them at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really liking what both shows, Black Lightning and Charmed, have delivered this past week, and I'm really excited overall for each of their seasons. I don't know. The Black Lightning, honestly, the main storyline is a little bit confusing to me, like what's been going on. Like, I mean, I get it, but I'm like, where is this going, you know? But the queer storyline, at least, I'm like, okay, I feel like whether they're listening to the fans or they just were going to plan on doing this in the first place, I'm liking the direction that it's going in. I'm hoping that we don't get another like 5-episode dry spell or something.
I would not survive that.
You know, like we said in the last episode, we will be talking about Black Lightning as long as they provide queer content for us to discuss. And with Charmed, it seems like I feel like they're going to be doing a better job of providing queer content in every single episode. So we will
I think they totally are. Yeah, I mean, look at how much screen time Nico got compared to the other supporting characters.
I know. It's true. Yeah. Mel's and romantic interest is the most important.
And the role that she played was central to the episode's conflict. Like mm-hmm. that was, it wasn't like peripheral at all. It was necessary to advance the overall plot.
It's so nice to see that.
We are so blessed. I'm still waiting for you. I'm like, I feel like I've got my eyes wide open waiting for the day that you get to have your queerub invasion.
I know. Someday, hopefully in my lifetime.
I know. Oh my gosh. All right. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope to have you join us next time.